You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back into the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Thank you for joining us here on a Tuesday. And on today's episode, we are going to, a little later after the break, continue the series that we started last week, looking at the Orioles' top 10 moves and transactions of the last full decade, spanning from January 1st of 2010 to December 31st of 2019. Three different GMs in that time for the Orioles, a lot of good moves that they made. But we're counting down the top 10, and today is going to be number 7 on the list. And after the break, we're going to talk about a reliever that the Orioles acquired in a trade in November of 2013 and was a huge help in not just the 2014 division winning season, but for years beyond that as well. Looked like a minor deal at the time, but it had major implications for the Orioles. That would be number 7 on the list. We will get to that a little bit later. But first, wanted to talk about the Orioles news from Monday as they completed their final player to be named later trade of the 2020 season, and now have an official list of all of the players, and especially all the players to be named later that they acquired in trades here in 2020. And the final trade that they had to sort out was probably the most minor of all the trades that they made, and it was dealing the right-handed pitcher Hector Velasquez over to the Houston Astros. Now, Velasquez, who back in 2017 had signed as an international free agent with the Red Sox and had pitched pretty well in Boston, spent parts of 2017, 2018, and 2019 pitching in a Red Sox uniform. He was, you know, ERA under 3 in 25 innings in 2017. Then he got some chances to start, was used a lot in 2018 by the Red Sox in their World Series season. Now, he was not used in the postseason, but he was really good in the regular season. 3.18 ERA in 85 innings that year. Then things went a little downhill for Velasquez in 2019. He was 30 years old now. He was a really late signing. And, you know, in 2019, he ended up throwing 56 innings, and the ERA ballooned to 5.43. And the Red Sox decided to move on from him. They DFA'd him. And the Orioles claimed him off waivers back on March 8th of 2020, literally days before COVID-19 really shut spring training down. So, you know, he was a part of the Orioles' plans just because of the previous success he had had in the major leagues. But for Velasquez, you know, he was 31 years old and kind of a late bloomer and coming off a bad season. So he definitely was not a lock to make the team. And I think the Orioles saw that. You know, they got back to summer camp in July, and then he did not make the Orioles' initial opening day roster. And on July 29th, the Orioles ended up trading him over to the Astros for a player to be named later after he was at the alternate site in Bowie for only a couple days. And you could see, you know, another team wanted him. But Velasquez did not pitch with the Astros this year. He spent the entire year at the Astros' alternate site. He was definitely a guy that was considered as an option on that team, but was never called up by Houston. So it was really a kind of a throwaway trade, you know, player to be named later. You didn't think much of it, but Mike Elias has done a good job with the players to be named later so far. And he got another, you know, somewhat promising prospect. He picks up the right-handed pitcher, Miguel Padilla, who is 18 years old. He won't be 19 until April of next year. A native of Venezuela who ended up signing with the Astros back in 2018 out of Venezuela. He pitched at the Dominican League team with the Astros in 2019. He threw 19 games all out of the bullpen for the Astros Dominican Summer League affiliate at just age 17 last year, or back in 2019. And he had a 2.08 ERA in 19 games. He threw 26 innings. He did pick up one save. He allowed 20 hits, just 6 earned runs. He allowed 2 homers. Now, the good number, 26 innings, he struck out 26. The bad number, he also walked 16 in that stretch. However, you know, you got guys that young, you're going to be happy about the strikeout numbers, and you're going to feel like his control is going to get better as he gets older. Again, still just 18 years old, years away from factoring at the major league level for the Orioles. But this trade for Miguel Padilla, the right-handed pitcher, kind of falls into, you know, what Mike Elias has done with a lot of these trades recently. You think of the Andrew Cashner trade over to the Red Sox last year. He gets two younger Dominican League players from the Red Sox, guys that were 17, 18, 19 years old. And, you know, they're long-term projects for the Orioles and guys who, you know, the teams you're trading with may not think much of. So you can get more of those guys. And then if you can develop them, you hope you get out of that Cashner trade. One of those two guys turns into a major leaguer at some point and you feel good about, you know, what happened with that trade. And you look at a guy like Miguel Padilla, even if he gets just a cup of coffee, you know, 4 or 5 years down, 6 years down the road in the big leagues with the Orioles, contributes in some way at the big league level. That is a huge win for the Orioles in a trade for a 31-year-old reliever who never pitched a game for the O's and was coming off a bad season and was DFA'd by a Boston Red Sox team that desperately needed pitching this year and still decided to move on from Hector Velasquez. So the Orioles do get Miguel Padilla, again, a 6'2" right-handed pitcher, 18 years old, out of Venezuela, with a solid season with the DSL Astros in 2019. And, you know, we'll see where he ends up with the O's in 2021. But Mike Elias continues to take these flyers on these younger guys. And that's what the Astros did a lot of in his time there, and it worked out for them. We'll see if it does the same for the Orioles. But it wraps up all the players they got in trades this year. You kind of look down the list of the guys they traded and the guys they got back. And listen, definitely a win for Mike Elias in 2020. You know, the team itself, the Orioles winning 25 games. No one expected it. Plus, he's able to trade off guys like, you know, Hector Velasquez, guys like Tommy Malone, Miguel Castro, Michael Givens, and get some good returns for some of these guys. So a great job by Mike Elias in 2020. It was actually yesterday. It was the two-year anniversary of the Orioles hiring him to be their general manager back in November of 2018. And I'd say so far, so good between Elias and the Orioles. But, you know, speaking of GMs, you know, Elias has made some good moves. And the Orioles' previous GM, Dan Duquette, he made some good moves too. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk about one of those moves that Duquette made as we continue to rank the Orioles' top 10 moves and transactions of the last decade. This one coming up after the break, Dan Duquette didn't give up much to get a really important reliever for the Orioles back in November of 2013. It was kind of a really small move at the time, but it turned out to be huge for the Orioles. They got one of their best relievers over the next 4 or 5 seasons. We'll talk about that move at number 7 on our list. That's coming up after the break. So we continue to count down the Orioles' top 10 moves and transactions of the last decade here on the podcast. We started this series last week. If you go back 3 of the episodes last week, were on this list. We started with number 10, the Orioles claiming Steve Pierce off waivers from the Yankees in September of 2012. Number 9 was the Orioles signing Nate McClouth to a minor league contract in June of 2012. And number 8 was the Orioles selecting Anthony Santander in the Rule 5 draft in December of 2016. And now we get to number 7 on the list. This one, a reliever that the Orioles got. First acquisition of a pitcher that we have on this list. And at number 7 on the Orioles' top 10 moves of the last decade, November 25th of 2013. The Orioles trade the minor league right-handed pitcher Devin Jones over to the Padres for right-handed pitcher Brad Brock. And you go back and look at this deal at the time. You know, the Orioles were coming off of the great 2012 season. Then 2013, you know, they had a winning record. They hung around the playoff chase, but ended up missing the postseason. And were looking to upgrade in 2014 to get back to that playoff positioning. And obviously later in the offseason, they would end up signing Nelson Cruz. And they would make some more minor moves to upgrade the team as well. But for the O's, you know, it was Cruz and signing Ubaldo Jimenez that offseason that were really the big moves that they made. But the Brad Brock move may have ended up helping them the most in the long term. And Brock was a guy who a lot of people didn't know much about when the Orioles made this move. He was a former 42nd round pick by the Padres in the 2008 MLB draft out of Monmouth University up in New Jersey. And, you know, New Jersey native, stayed right at home to play college baseball, was not on a lot of teams' radar. Again, a 42nd round pick, you know, that's not even possible in the draft now. Even when we get a full draft now, it only goes up to 40 rounds. But when it used to go to 50, Brock was taken in the 42nd round. But he really just dominated the minor leagues quickly. I mean, he was awesome 2008, 2009 in the Padres system. High A in 2010, he was ridiculous. Went to Double A in 2011 and just killed it. Then went to Triple A, continued to kill it. And all of a sudden, September of 2011, he got the call up, and you know, he made 9 appearances with the Padres in 2011. And then in 2012, you know, he was a big time reliever for them, at least in a middle relief role. 67 games and a 3.78 ERA. And 2013, you know, he missed a little bit of time in 2013 as well, and spent a good chunk at AAA. But when he was in the majors with the Padres, he pitched 31 innings and had a 3.19 ERA in 33 appearances. So he was solid in 2013, but he was coming off a season where the Padres kind of, you know, moved him back and forth between AAA and the majors that year. And I think the Orioles saw that as well and felt like he'd been good when he'd been at the major leagues, but the Padres weren't valuing him. So the O's, you know, kind of bought low on Brad Brock. They ended up sending, again, in November of 2013, a right-handed pitcher, Devin Jones, whom the Orioles had taken in the 9th round of the draft back in 2011 out of Mississippi State. Jones, up to that point in the Orioles system, was having some success, but was actually coming off of really a disappointing 2013 season, where he spent basically the entire year at Bowie as a starting pitcher. And in 24 starts at Bowie, he had a 5.84 ERA on the season, and was striking out less than 8 batters per 9. Now, he was still, you know, regarded as a solid prospect, but things flamed out for Jones once he went to San Diego. He was awful in AA and got injured in 2014, came back in 2015, actually, as a member of the Orioles. After that awful season in 2014, he was released by San Diego. The Orioles actually signed him to a minor league contract. He pitched in Frederick in 2015, didn't do well, and that was the end of his minor league career. But on the other side for Brock, you know, the Orioles bring him in for the 2014 season, and, you know, he wasn't a heavily used guy that year in 2014. And you remember, he only pitched twice in the postseason in 2014, but in the regular season, he had a good year as, you know, really kind of a bridge guy from the starters to the big time back end of the bullpen. And you know, if you could get it from the starters to the guys like O'Day and Andrew Miller and Zach Britton, that was great. But a lot of the times you needed Brad Brock in that fifth, sixth inning to get it there. And in 2014, he pitched in 46 games, 62 and a third innings with the Orioles, a 3.18 ERA, and 7.8 Ks per 9. It was a solid year. He made the postseason roster. He pitched in one game against the Tigers, retired both batters he faced. And then he pitched in a game against the Royals in the ALCS, where he threw a big-time inning and two-thirds scoreless out of the bullpen. And so the Orioles were kind of feeling they had a solid middle reliever going forward. And then in 2015, of course, Brock's numbers got a lot better and his role got a lot bigger. 62 games in 2015, 79 and a third innings, 2.72 ERA. Strikeouts went up to 10.1 per 9. And I think in 2015, in his age 29 season, the Orioles realized that they had a really good reliever on their hands. And that continued into 2016. And you could make an argument that without Brad Brock in 2016, the Orioles do not get that wild card spot and do not get into the postseason in 2016. Brad Brock was named an All-Star in 2016. He was ridiculous. He had an ERA under 1 in the first half of the season, and that's why, as a reliever who wasn't even a closer at that point, I mean, Zach Britton was still the closer, and frankly, the Orioles were still going to Darren O'Day in big spots over Brad Brock at times, but Brock kind of solidified himself behind Britton as the number two reliever. Of course, Britton had that fantastic season where he converted every save and was the best reliever in baseball. But Brock was really the second best guy in that bullpen. 71 games were a career high for him in 2016. 79 innings was just a third of an inning less than the year before. A 2.05 ERA for Brock, which is still a career best for him, and 10.5 Ks per nine, which is also a career best still for Brad Brock, as he made the All-Star team. Of course, was a huge help in getting the Orioles to the postseason, pitched an inning and a third scoreless in the wild card game against Toronto, and was just fantastic that year for Baltimore. Then, of course, you go to 2017, another really good year for him. He had to step in for an injured Zach Britton for a while. Ended up getting 18 saves for the Orioles in 2017 in 68 innings, had a 3.18 ERA. And then in 2018, you know, again, stepping in for Britton for some time while he was injured, had 12 saves that year, had 11 saves with the Orioles in 42 games, had a 4.85 ERA. And then the O's dealt him at the deadline, sent him over to the Atlanta Braves for international bonus slot money. I always felt like the Orioles could have gotten more for Brock, but his numbers did take a little bit of a dip in that 2018 season. If he would have at least kept the 2017 level, they could have gotten more for him at the 2018 deadline, but he was moved to Atlanta. He has since finished that year with Atlanta, was really good down the stretch with the Braves. Then he signed with the Cubs in 2019. It didn't work out. Found his way onto the Mets for the rest of that 2019 season, pitched well, and then pitched the entirety of 2020 in the New York Mets bullpen. But for Brad Brock, you know, you look at that stretch with Baltimore, 2014 through the trade deadline in 2018. So, you know, really 4.5 seasons with the Orioles. He was in that stretch probably, you could say, the Orioles' second best reliever behind Zach Britton in that 4.5-year stretch from opening day 2014 to the trade deadline in 2018. And that's a lot to say with a team with a lot of good relievers who pitched in that time, the Darren O'Days, the Andrew Millers, you know, even the later guys as well. But, you know, there were so many good arms in that bullpen, and Brock was the second best of them. He was the best guy who wasn't the closer for the team, although he did, you know, in his time with the Orioles, end up picking up 32 saves. And his final numbers with the Orioles, he pitched in 288 games as an Oriole, just under 328 innings. He had 32 saves. He had a 2.99 ERA and 9.4 Ks per nine for Brad Brock. Just an incredible time with the Orioles. And hey, you know, he's still with the Mets, and you know, next year will be his age 35 season and should be back in that Mets bullpen for a team that's looking to compete for a World Series next year. And hopefully Brock continues to pitch and pitch in the postseason, and hopefully somebody can get him a World Series title. But this was one of the best moves, really, that Dan Duquette ever made. I mean, Devin Jones was a nothing prospect, it turned out to be, and the Orioles got 4.5 years of a fantastic reliever who made an all-star team without being a closer. That's how good he was in 2016, and really was one of the biggest parts in the O's getting to the postseason that year. And so Brad Brock comes in at number 7 on the list. You know, that great fastball, solid breaking ball, and that splitter, that changeup, split change, whatever you want to call it, that he throws was his best pitch as an Oriole. Got righties and lefties out. He was, you know, a little herky jerky on the mound, but he was really, really fun to watch, and one of the best relievers the O's had in that time. And we wish nothing but the best to Brad Brock as he, you know, continues his Major League Baseball career, still chugging on. Again, it'll be his age 35 season with the Mets, really his hometown team next year. But what a move that was from Duquette, giving up basically nothing for 4.5 fantastic years of Brad Brock. And that's why it comes in at number 7 on our list of the Orioles' top 10 moves of the last decade. Later in the week, we will continue this list. In a couple days, look at number 6 on the list. One of the biggest trades that the Orioles made in the decade. You can honestly argue it was the most well-known trade the Orioles made in the last decade, and it comes in at number 6 on the list. But also later in the week, we're going to continue to look at the Orioles' moves that they will potentially make this week. Friday is the deadline to protect prospects on the 40-man roster from the Rule 5 draft. We talked about it a bit yesterday, but later in the week, we're going to have Bob Phelan on from the BSL On the Verge podcast. We're going to talk a little deeper about which prospects will be protected and which guys will be left available in the Rule 5 draft. That's all coming up starting tomorrow when we are back here with you on the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.